The History Here and Now podcast is dedicated to bringing you great stories from the past. Here we talk about people, places, events, culture, and practically every other facet involved with history. Does it sound complicated? Well, history is just that, complicated, but it doesn't have to be. I'm here to help break things down and make history more fun, so let's get started. Welcome to History Here and Now. I'm Thomas, the voice inside your podcast machine, and today is a great day to learn about history. And today's episode is going to take a biographical approach once again, as we talk about one of the most influential poets of the 18th century. Now, you probably have heard some of his poetry in one form or another at some point in your life, but you may not know much about the man himself unless it is that you're Scottish. Now, January 25th holds a special place in the hearts of Scottish people dispersed throughout the world. On that day in 1759, a poor tenant farming family in Ayrshire, Scotland, welcomed another child into their ranks, Robert Burns. Little did he or his family realize that his literary skills would resonate throughout the social fabric of history in ways that enter our everyday lexicon and idioms. Burns's poems pinpoint the everyman and the struggles in life, pushing us to understand the chaos and natural beauty of the world. This poor farmer turned poet was at the forefront of the Romantic movement who inspired future poets like William Wordsworth, Percy Shelley, and Sir Walter Scott. But why does his memory and poetry carry on into the modern day? Why does his 18th century message resonate in the 21st century? Now, to give a little bit of background on Robert Burns himself before we actually delve into his whole, you know, historical and social impact, it's going to be necessary to talk a little bit about his life here. Now, again, like I said previously, born on January 25th, 1759, in the region of Ayrshire, he came into the world of a small cottage of a struggling farming family with six other siblings. His father, William Burns, built their cottage, which is a historic site and museum today. But when Robert was 7 years old, the family moved from another farm in Ayrshire to an area called Mount Oliphant. Burns received a minimal education, and by the age of 15, he left school and began working alongside his father on the farm. When conditions deteriorated at Mount Oliphant, the family moved to another farm at Tarbleton. In 1784, William had passed away, and the family was continuing to struggle under the burden of tenant farming, which of course brought its own set of financial woes. And this hard life shaped Burns's personality and perspectives on life. While working in the town of Irvine, Burns met a sea captain named Richard Brown, who Burns remembered as, quote, "He encouraged me to endeavor at the character of a poet," end quote. This chance meeting inspired Burns to begin writing, and some of his first writing accounts included recording local songs and stories, with his earliest works becoming famous in later years. By the next year, 1785, Burns was under dire financial burdens, though. Practically every farm he labored on returned meager profits, and it perpetuated a cycle of poverty he had known pretty much his entire life. A friend had offered him a job in the West Indies as a bookkeeper on a plantation, but Burns was so poor by this point he couldn't even afford the boat journey, and another friend, Gavin Hamilton, persuaded to publish his volume of poetry. The next year, 1786, Burns's first publication entitled Poems, chiefly in the Scottish dialect, immediately became a bestseller. One volume, called the Caermarnock volume, was the foundation of all of his literary skills and prose. Now, the next stage for any budding artist and writer at that time in Scotland was to establish oneself on the social scene in Edinburgh, which Burns did that same year. He was there promoting his Caermarnock volume, which was well received. It was here that he inspired another budding young writer named Walter Scott, not having the title of Sir by this point. He had stayed in Edinburgh for 2 years, forging important friendships and expanding his literary repertoire. Burns returned to farming in 1788, moving to Dumfries, and he found additional work as an exciseman. He was collecting taxes on duties as a fallback to keep him and his family fed. The next great literary contribution came with his work writing songs for the Scottish Airs for The Voice by George Thompson and Scott's Musical Museum with James Johnson, whom he'd met in his Edinburgh days. He put words to Scottish folk melodies and airs that he continued to collect, and composing his own arrangements of music. He collected and preserved folk songs, even putting his own poems to traditional music, and thanks to Burns, local songs and stories could be heard throughout Scotland, and arguably making him one of the first oral historians of this day. Now, when examining Burns' achievements, one would think that he had finally escaped these poor conditions, accomplishing a great deal of wealth and valuable connections. However, farm labor, the extensive traveling, and a chronic heart condition since childhood had taken a strenuous physical toll. He also harbored strong liberal political views, along with supporting the French Revolution, and this ended up alienating many of his Edinburgh friends, and Burns proving his patriotic loyalty by joining the Royal Dumfries Volunteers, which was a militia. But the light of Burns' life was soon extinguished, and he died on July 21st, 1796. He was survived by numerous lovers, his wife Gina Moore, 12 children, close friends, and a legacy that brings us here to the present day. Now, Burns wrote and compiled hundreds of songs and poems in his short life, many he collected from his travels. He wrote and recited much of his poetry in both Scots and the Scottish-English dialects. A lot of his poems had featured themes on nature, love, man's relationship with the natural world, class struggle and inequality, republicanism, religion, and nationalism. He had championed the basic rights of man and was leery of the moral codes of the privileged few. Readers both loved and loathed his poetry, as some believed his radical political views won him few friends, but others rejoiced that a voice for the downtrodden common man was speaking up at a revolutionary time in history. The passion, brazen language, and ideal devotion inculcated in every poem has labeled Burns an inspiration to the group of emerging Romantic era writers, as previously mentioned, like Wordsworth, Shelley, and Scott. Now, to give a little bit of wider historical and social context, how then has his life had a bigger impact on the world itself? Now, like many ethnic groups who migrate globally, the Scottish diaspora exported not only the people, but the accompanying culture as migrants settled in new and foreign continents. Incidentally, Burns dinners became a significant cultural export within Scottish communities. Burns dinners, or also known as Burns nights, are commemorative events where people gather to honor the life and works of Robert Burns by sharing a traditional Scottish meal and reciting poetry. There is a wealth of collective knowledge on the dinner's procedures, but no dinner is complete without a keynote speech called the Immortal Memory. This address is typically given by a scholar or a Burns aficionado, extolling the accomplishments and significance of Scottish culture. And just like the massive repertoire of Burns' literary knowledge, immortal memories can be structured in any way the speaker wants to reflect on for the dinner. Some will adopt a strictly biographical approach, others place in a historical context or a political stance, or even a jovial fashion like Burns himself. By the evening's end, the audience departs with a more profound appreciation of the bard. And of course, Burns dinners will also feature things such as plenty of bagpipe music. There'll be Scottish food and drink, of course, as we all know, will include scotch. And the centerpiece, dish that one will see is, of course, the presentation of haggis. And for those who enjoy going on a culinary adventure, if you haven't had haggis on your list, this is something you should definitely have on there, you know, to experience at least once in your life. I would go into detail explaining what exactly it is, but it's better if you probably just experience it for yourself. Now, circling back to a question I asked earlier at the beginning of this podcast, why does his legacy carry on into the modern day? Well, Burns's poetry in many ways inculcates the human spirit arising from the challenges of life. We can examine the broad Scottish historical narrative, and Scots possessed a tenacity allowing them to plant roots and adapt in otherwise stressful environments. Burns had moved from one tenant farm to another pretty much through the majority of his life, and he was perplexed by how to provide steadily for his family. Scottish communities retained these lessons through Burns dinners. This quickly became an established cultural community where people with shared heritage maintained their practices through societal cohesion. Burns dinners are an integral part of cultural communities that provide people with a tangible connection to history. And that's why Burns' message carries on. Descendants of the Scottish diaspora keep the tradition alive by adopting his poetic themes to modern times. And of course, Burns' poetry impacts us more than we could have anticipated. There are struggles, achievements, and lessons he experienced throughout his short life, and they're a microcosm of not only the Scottish people, but almost all people. Burns had solved the world for both its faults and beauty, and putting the human condition in linguistic craft resonating throughout history. And of course, we know about all the financial hardships he endured, and of course, a lot of bad luck. There was heartbreak, but also blissful love. There was fame, notoriety, you know, of course, experienced fatherhood at least 12 times that we know of, another thing that kept him busy, and camaraderie, which recorded all was through a masterful skill of prose and song in his native tongue. Now, the other main important part about honoring Burns' life in the immortal memory, it's a uniqueness that stems from the notion that the speaker can craft an explanation of Burns in their own way. Burns' messages are impactful, and the connection between man and the natural world resonates profoundly. In one of his poems, To a Mouse, written in 1785, it speaks volume to this important yet fragile relationship. The story behind this poem tells that Burns composed the poem on the spot after cutting his plow through a nest of field mice. And a portion of his poem goes as such. And to preface, this was written in the original Scots dialect, and so if it's sort of hard to understand, you might just want to Google the original English version. Wee sleeklet cowren timorous beastie, oh what a panic's in thy bristie. Thou need na start a was a hasty wi' bickering brattle. I wad be laith to run and chase thee with murderin' paddle. I'm truly sorry man's dominion has broken nature's social union, and justifies that ill opinion which makes thee startle at me, thy poor earthborn companion and fellow mortal. I doubt no whiles, but thou may thieve, what then, poor bristie, thou may leave? A dam and ichor in a thrave is some our request. I get a blessing with the lave and never missed. Thy wee bit house thee too in the ruin, it sally was the winds of stewing, and nothing now to big a newer, and foggy green, and bleak December winds ensuing, but snell and keen. I saw the fields lay baste, barren waste, and weary winter coming fast, and cozy here beneath the blast, the thought to dwell till crash the cruel coulter passed out through thy cell. The wee bit heap o' leaves and stibble had cost thee money a weary nibble. Now founds are turned out for trouble, but how so hauled to throw the weary city dribble and chronic cowled? But, Mousie, thou art no thy vain, improving foresight may be vain. The best laid schemes of mice and men gang aft angly, and lay us not but grief and pain for promised joy. Still thou art blessed, compared with me, the present only toucheth thee. But, och, I backward cast my ee on prospects drear, and for though I cannot see, I guess and fear. Now, apologies for any Scottish listeners out there who have tried butchering the Scotch dialect or even the accent, but I feel it was only appropriate to really get the feeling hearing it in a Scottish tone or brogue. Poetry delivers more than a story. It teaches us lessons about life that we have difficulty accepting. Now, when Burns had plowed through his field and upturned the nest of mice, he understood what he had done. A natural force disrupted the fragile bond between nature and its creatures. The mice needed the nest to survive the winter, and just as his plow tore through the soil, chaotic forces disrupt the relationships between creature and nature. We live in fear of nature as it can turn without warning, whether it be a flood, fire, storm, or earthquake. Our livelihoods are fickle in the face of nature. The mice prepare their nest for a long time, building their home together as a social union with the land. Burns felt that empathy when his plow destroyed their hearth. He understood the pain of losing a home, the nomadic life of tenant farming, and prevailing uncertainty of the future with life's uncertainty. Now, nature's chaos stays with us, and we see its ravages around the world. There are ferocious hurricanes in the Atlantic, shattering earthquakes, raging wildfires, drought and famine, sub-zero blizzards, or torrential floods right here in our own homes. Our best laid plans go awry when nature unleashes chaos from the ground and sky. Burns knew the natural dangers, but he also saw its beauty. There was a deep blue sky, the bright sun, the warm light shining down on the fields, and on every creature builds a home in the rolling green hills. We are both men and mice, building homes for our family to give us a place of comfort and joy. Their sudden destruction gives them a sanctity, making home a place like no other. Now, I really hope you enjoyed that story. History Here and Now is a website dedicated to the research and writing about different historical topics. If you like this podcast, hit the like button, share it on social media, recommend it to your friends, families, colleagues, and anyone you think would enjoy hearing a good history discussion. You can follow History Here and Now on Twitter and check back periodically for the next episode. Until then, good luck, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.